can tell when
Blog
you're doing
talk radio.
So I'm putting you off, and he's got my friend kind of blocked. And then he's like, man, he's asking you to contribute. I said, listen, man, we got to go. Yeah, look, if you can contribute, I said, we got to go. Because my friend couldn't get around him. You know, my friend's a little bit, you know, he's handicapped, and he's a little bit slower. And I was like, you know, if I was going to shove this guy, I was. So I didn't tell my friend, I said, when you're walking with me, I'm gonna be cranking down there. So I think he wasn't used to doing something like this with me, because he would just kind of go down there, and we got there, and he was doing his own gig. But then next thing you know, I'm getting pulled for interviews because nobody else had the thunder with get up like I did. The people were like, yo, can we get a picture with you? I had somebody that didn't speak English that had on their phone, may I take a picture of you, ? And they showed it to me so I could get a picture of them.
Wow. All right. Well, we're live. We haven't done our introductions yet, but if you're a long time listener, you know it's Tony, Tom, and Rich here, cranking it live. We've got the Rocky Run to talk about. Tony's going to be chatting about that, I'm sure, through the whole show. We already got it written in to the description since we're doing it live again. At least we should have call-in guests again, the way we used to do it. But anyway, we don't have a guest tonight, but we got a lot to talk about. UFC fight card was pretty wild. I put it out there, 60-second bet for 60 seconds of the first round for the Aspinall fight. It happened for like four other fights, but not that one. It was like 5 seconds off from the first 60 seconds. So I didn't miss. Unfortunately, they don't give you a 5-second buffer on the bets, but I did get a second round knockout for the two-time champion now in like the least amount of fights in history of the UFC for a professional MMA fighter, Pereira. Just unbelievable. And then Aspinall just outright beat the hell out of Sergey there. It's just,
well, I don't know. It was just one or two punches. It just, you know, you could see early on that Sergey landed enough where Tom realized, okay, this power is real.
Yeah.
But he just stuck to his plan. And, you know, there's a saying, speed kills. Speed can overcome a lot. But he had the size and the power also.
Right.
And, man, what a load he is now.
Yeah.
And he's going to be hard to beat. And the problem now, what's the next fight for him? Does he have to defend the interim belt? I mean, that sounds kind of crazy. Defend the interim belt?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, who knows?
I mean, well, John Jones having that kind of injury, he's going to be out for a long time.
Oh, yeah, maybe. You know, as they say, 6-8 months, could be a year.
Yeah.
So, and I guess all he wants to do is fight Stipe. So, you know, and so do you match up Stipe with Aspinall? I mean, what do you do?
Right.
I don't know. It's a hell of a problem.
Right. Well, and then the big surprise, I mean, I think all of the last three fights were kind of a surprise, but only because of the Aspinall knee injury. You know, I just didn't know how well he was going to do on his feet and if he was going to get one leg kick and be done, you know, who knew. And obviously he took the time to heal properly and he was fine on his feet. But Jessica Andrade also at strawweight just wiped the mat with Mackenzie Dern. She was a big, heavy favorite going in. You know, everybody thought Andrade was done. She wasn't putting together good performances, but man, she just did not stop coming forward. Just punches, everything. And Dern just couldn't take it. She just did not have the chin. I even saw a post on Facebook where somebody was like talking about you shouldn't have went in a different direction with your coaches, and they were like hinting at like the fact that her coaches were not prepared for the striking that Andre was going to bring. And McKenzie is pretty much a wrestler and grappler and submission person. She was heavily favored to get a submission or decision. So, yeah, a lot of people were not expecting that one. A lot of first-round knockouts in this one. Which I don't know if it says anything about the matchmaking or if it's just the event itself with the two heavyweight title fights or the two big title fights, light heavyweight and heavyweight, leading the card. But, man, this is Madison Square Garden, too. I think that brought a lot out of people. But anyway, Benoit St. Denis took out Matt Frivola with a head kick. Beautiful landed head kick. 1 minute and 31 seconds into the first round. Diego Lopes, if you actually Googled, you know, best bets for UFC 295 before the fight, it would tell you Diego Lopes by knockout. And I wasn't smart enough to bet it outright. You know, I put it in with some parlays that didn't pay off. But, man, AI. So it even says AI assisted in the Google search. AI was right on that one. He did not waste much time. He went in there and just clubbed down Sabatini. 1 minute and 30 seconds left in the round. Steve Ursig got an unanimous decision win over Alessandro Costa. Came on a little bit late in the fight, but just did not have enough to really sway the judges. Ursig kind of looks like, you know, a typical nerd. If you look at him dressed, you know, even with his shirt off, doesn't look like much, but he's got some talent. He's crafty. I don't know if he's champion material yet, but flyweight, tough weight for the guys. Lupita Godinez at strawweight edged out a split decision against Tabitha Ricci. Talking about coming on late. She was just really scrappy in that fight. Matus Rebecki. He did not waste time either. Just armbarred Roosevelt Roberts in the first couple minutes of the fight. 3:08 left. And then the draw. Again, a draw. Unbelievable. Plus 5,000 odds every time there's a draw. So I should have put my buck on every fight this time. I did not. Vyacheslav Borshev and Nadim Sadikov as a majority draw. And it was worth it.
Did you watch that fight, Rich?
I did. It was nuts.
did you see the first round that the ball fighter was just, he was in a groove.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost like he was landing good shots, but there was no violence. It was like Rembrandt. like one of those old karate dummies I used to have as a kid that had numbers on there, you know, strikes. I mean, he was flawless.
Yeah,
and then the second round started that same way. And if someone is in a rhythm, you got to get them out of it.
Yeah.
And nothing like a good punch. And so I had that 10-8, and then he came back and won the third. So I think the draw was justified.
Oh, yeah.
I completely agree. But what an incredible fight that was.
Yeah, it was very technical.
And then talk about bad tactics. In the second round, he didn't, you know, the bad guy was out.
Yeah.
And they were saying, let him stand up. Get him back to his feet. He can't even stand. Finish him on the feet.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. Bad tactics. But they'll be back. Well, both guys, impressive.
And then Jared Gordon, a heavy favorite against Marco Madsen, and he proved it. That was the one you had to have the first 60 seconds on. It was only just one other fight. I thought it was more than that, but I think that was because there was so many first-round knockouts. I got confused. But, yeah, it took him only 28 seconds to dispatch Marco Madsen with some elbows and punches. So he was a heavy favorite, I know. From the odds, but to do the 60-second knockout, I would not have expected that. I don't think many people did. I bet you those odds were huge. I did not check them out before the fight. Anyway, John Castaneda, also kind of a little bit of a surprise that he got the unanimous decision there in the third fight of the night against Kyung Ho Kang, who is like, you know, kind of a wiry submission artist. But Castaneda just put together a better game plan there. And Joshua Van, oh, one of the best performances of the night, I think. It didn't earn a knockout or a submission, finish period. It was against Kevin Borjas, and boy, you talk about a comeback. He was getting a little smoked in the first round, Van, and he started coming back with the most vicious body shots I have ever seen in an MMA fight. Short little uppercut hooks to the ribs and the belly, and he just took the wind out of Borjas' sails, and second and third round were his. And this guy was not defending them at all. And after each one or two, it was usually two at a time, left and right, I mean, boxers could learn from his style in that fight, because he just did the body head, changing levels, all that shit, just beautifully. And just looked very technical, very, very experienced in there, did not get intimidated by the early slugfest. And yeah, that was just a map. Talk about Rembrandt. That was painting the picture of the perfect comeback there. So Joshua Van's one to watch out for. Would not bet against him. he might not knock you out, but he's gonna find a way to win. Jamal Emmers as well got a first round knockout TKO against Dennis Bazooka. Bazooka did not fire. Full charge, I guess. It's 49 seconds left in that round. So, yeah, it was a lot of quick finishes. Fast card. Jiří Prochazka was actually very gracious in defeat against Alex Pereira in the main event. And a big surprise. I actually saw a video, like, I think it was like 2 days after the fight. I've never seen anything like it where, you know, there's a lot of talk that the fight was stopped early. You know, UFC fighters and fans and everything like that love to talk about, you know, the referees not doing their jobs or not letting people fight. But here, Goddard, who is no stranger to criticism for stopping fights at all, is one of the big time people that gets complaints. He actually stopped the fight. You know, it was his responsibility. So Jiří Prochazka puts out his own video, and he starts right off saying Mark Goddard was right. It had to be Mark Goddard's best day as a referee.
Yeah.
Because I'd never seen him before, and he was serious. Like he said, I was out, you know, he did a good job. He did his job. You'll see me again, basically.
Yeah, and did you notice the stare down right after the introduction? Alex was a statue. He didn't blink.
Yeah.
At all. And Jiří is doing, you know, he's doing a lot of the karate stuff. He had the strangest stance. But I was listening to Teddy Atlas weigh in on it, and Teddy was saying part of the secret there was Alex just wouldn't let Jiří be unconventional.
Right.
He just used his
well, he had the intel. He had all the intel from you know, his mentor.
From Glover. And those leg kicks apparently are so fast,
yep.
And he doesn't telegraph. I mean, Jiří's leg was a mess 2 minutes into it, and I'm thinking, my God, what's he going to do? And even when he got him on the ground, he couldn't do damage in the first round, if you remember that. I mean, Alex is...
I've been saying it for years. Like, leg kicks are so underutilized in MMA, period. And, like, just a couple weeks ago, maybe three now, we saw a guy win a fight with almost only throwing leg kicks. So,
and I think they're more effective because when I was training, we were never taught to go for the calf kick.
Yeah.
We just went to the thigh. And that was pretty devastating, but the calf kick seems to be impossible to block from someone like Pereira.
Oh, yeah.
So, man, good luck to his next opponent.
Yeah, he's comfortable at that weight. He looks good. He did get caught a bunch of times. He came close to being the loser of that fight. In second round there. Man, I thought it was going to be over. And then he regrouped. Got his wits back, got his legs back, got his distance. And see, that's his biggest flaw, I think, is his tendency to smell the blood in the water and drop all manner of defense. That's his kryptonite. You know, that's what got Izzy the victory in the first fight, in the last fight, I mean. And it just is so hard for a fighter like him not to do in the transition, because kickboxing, you can do that shit a lot.
Wow.
A lot of those fighters fight like that because it's just the nature of the stance. You know, when you're trying to throw a kick, your hands are going to be out by your shoulders. When you're trying to throw a knee or get a Muay Thai clinch, you know, your hands are in different place. You don't want to always be up by your chin like you are in boxing. So, it's just a bad habit for MMA fighters to fight like that in the trenches. But, you know, if he's got the chin to take it, obviously he showed he can weather the storm and get the knockout himself, you know, because you lure people in that way. That's another advantage of that.
Yeah, so it'll be real interesting to see how Hill fights him, because rightfully so, Jermall Hill's got the next shot at him.
Yeah.
So this will be fun to see how he goes about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So yeah, I won a little bit. I think I won like $30 on the second round knockout, but all my other bets bombs on that card. I didn't bet a ton, but that's not one of my best events. So 5 seconds off on the first 60 seconds bet. That was kind of a pain in the ass. Like when you win when you think you're gonna win the lottery, you got four numbers, and then the fifth and sixth numbers like are one off.
Yep.
Damn it! No, it wasn't that much I would have won anyway, but still. And it came close to me winning. It like could have been stopped earlier, unlike the main event. All right, so. Last weekend for boxing. Let's check the schedule here. Actually, we got some shit going on tonight. Did not know this.
Thursday night, huh?
Yeah. Shakur Stevenson out in the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas is fighting. He's undefeated, 20-0. Fighting Edwin De Los Santos for the WBC World Lightweight title, which is vacant. De Los Santos is 16-1. 12-round lightweight. And then we got Emmanuel Navarrete, 38-1, fighting Robson Conceição, who is 17-2.
For the WBO. Which one is this on? Is this on like the Zone? ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
And the odds, I believe Shakur is minus 1,500, and then his opponent's plus 650. But this may be an interesting fight. I mean,
yes, that's a 10:30.
So he's got a pretty good punch. That's really funny. Today I'm punching around at work, and I'm running my team myself until Tuesday because there's only two of us instead of three because we haven't replaced the one guy yet. And the other guy is taking some few days off because he's running like a 13-mile marathon this weekend. God bless him. He's a serious runner, unlike me. So I'm working today, and then I get a few-minute break, and I'm live on Facebook, and I'm like, hey, what are you? And I see a post like, oh, Stevenson's fighting tonight, whatever. And I'm like, you know, my brain's not totally turned on at the time. And I'm like, Donna Stevenson, didn't he retire because of injury? I could not think Shakur Stevenson. I couldn't, you know, wow. Yeah. I kept thinking, I'm like, Stevenson. And then the next thing you know, my email, work email just blowing up with shit I can't pass on to anybody else. I had to do it. God damn it. I'm doing it anymore.
Anyway, yeah.
Tomorrow ends my last full work week of the season. Because I will be taking 2 vacation days a week for the rest of the year.
Oh, there you go.
And I'll still be carrying 10 days over, and I'll still be losing about a week.
Well, then, take 3. 3 a week.
You know, wish I could. Like, you know, I was saying, if my team was fully staffed, I probably could. But, you know, we're, and the other guy, he's in the same boat I'm in, so he's like, he's taking 2 days a week off. I'm taking 2 days a week off. I think the only mutual day we're going to work is Wednesday, because that's our meeting day.
Well, then, be like passing the torch. Okay, so some more results. Go to Montreal last Tuesday, just this couple days ago here.
Steve, I think Iceman Scully had the 1-pointer in that, didn't he?
I don't know. Possibly.
I think he did.
Because, you know, Brett Terbiev trains in Montreal.
Yeah. I know Iceman was posting photos yesterday. So I'm pretty sure he was working in one corner.
Well, Steve Claggett got a unanimous decision in the main event there over Miguel Medueno. Got a couple titles. NABF Super Lightweight and WBO International Super Lightweight. Proves to 37-7. With 2 draws. Medueno falls to 30-2. Steven Butler got a TKO in the 9th out of 10 over Ivan Alvarez. Kind of a journeyman fighter, 32-15-4 now. Butler improves to 33-4-1. I don't know which fighter our buddy had there. I don't have a full card in front of me. I did the 2-star version of the results. And maybe he had a 1-star fight. John Scully. He posted something tonight and made me laugh my ass off. The fucking algorithm on Facebook matching Lee Harvey Oswald to his arch rival. Tommy Reno.
Sure have their own reality show. I've always said the one thing I really liked about John was, it's like, you know, I watched him fight. You know, I watched him fight at the Blue Horizon on Tuesday night fight against Tony the Punch and Postman Thornton. I remember when he fought Michael Nunn. I remember when he fought over in Germany against Michalewski. And so you see a guy, and you know he's obviously a top tier fighter. But then it's like I started interacting with him almost 20 years ago on a AOL chat group, you know. And we just became fast friends. And this, hearing his stories, and you know, I can relate to him because I've taken boxing road trips, you know, with the amateurs. And then here, like when he'd have a group of kids that he would take to a show. And some of the stories he would tell, like, behind the scenes, and I'm like, oh, my God, I can relate to that. I can totally see that happening. And then he would just crack jokes. And then one time he had a picture of Chad Dawson when he was pretty young, and all you see in the back is, like, a stream of water coming from a super soaker, and this was right before we got him on Impact. It was like a drive-by. Mm-hmm. He had just a sense of humor. And, you know, you listen to him, and it's like, you really get interested in not just what goes on in the ring, but what goes on behind the scenes and in the preparation to getting in the ring.
Right.
You have too many guys who want to think you want to talk to them about a fight, right? You know, you're a trainer. Hey, you got so-and-so coming up here. What do you think? Well, we had a really good camp, and, you know, it's, you know, we're working hard, and, you know, it's going to be a good fight. You know.
Well, he's been a color commentator before, too.
I know, Tony. I know, yeah. Exactly. You know what reminds me of a lot of these guys? It reminds me of, like, I was a kid growing up. But right before Hulk Hogan took over, the WWF champion was Bob Backlund, who was a great athlete. But what they say. Like, you watch his old school interviews, and I'm like, oh my God, people bought tickets to see this guy. Like, Bob, you got this big title defense coming up against the Iron Sheik. How do you feel about it? It's going to be a tough match. He's a good opponent, and he's a worthy opponent, but I've been training really hard, and I think we're going to be able to get him. Oh my God. I mean, you got both of those. Like, let me tell you something, brother. You know, we got this shit out here, the big bad shit, and he's been tearing people apart. Well, he ain't done nothing yet. So he's come out, and what you gonna do, brother? And it's like, oh my God, you wanna buy that? It's like, see, it's a, you know, hey, we're on this road trip, and he's like, tell a story or something. He goes, I went in the bathroom, and he goes, next thing I know, coaches were walking out of it. I'm like, oh my God, somebody's taking up the whole place. And it's like, he's like, then I gotta walk out through the walk of shame. That's funny, and it's like, oh my God, I want to listen to this guy more. I want to read his book. I want to hear his story, and I want to learn more about the behind the scenes, because that's interesting. It's funny. It's not dry.
Right. Yeah. Crazy stuff. Talk about crazy stuff. Remember last week when I was making fun of Albert Bell for having the name of a baseball player? Well, he knocked out his guy in the second round, so we gotta start taking him seriously. Appropriately named Glass City Center in Toledo. I guess Jason Blair's had a glass draw. It was his 12th loss, 30 wins, one draw. Super featherweight too. Second round knockout. Don't see that a lot. Super featherweight. But Albert Bell is the real deal. He don't need his elbow when you're trying to steal a base. He can knock you out. Anyway, also we had some from Thunder Studios in Long Beach. Sounds like it was a movie. No, it was a fight. Irma Garcia beating Stephanie Silva in a super flyweight fight for the IBF World Super Flyweight title. And Silva had been undefeated going in. 8-0, but Irma had the experience and got the unanimous decision win. She improves to 23-5-1. And that was pretty much the biggest fight on that card. Let's see what else we got. We got stuff going back to Friday. Another one. Oh, here it is. Yeah. From the Phoenix Center in Ontario, there was a good one. Ernesto Mercado coming in at 12-0, knocked out, talk about second round. Jeremiah Nakatila, who is no cheap date, as Tom likes to say, 23-3 at super lightweight. So Mercado, quite the prospect at 13-0 now. And that's about it. We go back to Friday now. Boy, there's a heck of a lot going on Friday. Except Harlem Eubank beating Timo Schwarzkopf. I actually bet on that one. Just, the odds were so high. He was already winning. I think it was a live bet. I was like, boxing's live. Let me check who's fighting. Harlem Eubank, 18-0 now. Beat not Storm and Norman, but Timo Schwarzkopf, who is 22-6 now. The vaunted WBO global super lightweight title now belongs to Eubank. I don't know how valued that is, but it is what it is. All right. So, we go to upcoming fights. We talked about what's going on tonight. That actually starts the ESPN card starts tonight at 10:30. The show will be probably over by then. All right. Let's see what we got for the weekend. Our two stars. Did we do the two stars? Maybe we didn't do the two. We did. Friday. Oh, here we go. Okay. United Kingdom BT Sport is putting on a card over in Manchester Arena. Not Manchester, New Hampshire, of course, Manchester, England. And a lot of big fights, a lot of little title fights here. Somebody's always got to go fight. And Isaac Dogbo, one of my favorite fighter names, is on the card. He's number 11 at featherweight, 24-3, fighting Nick Ball, who is 18-0. Wonder if his nickname is on the Nick on the ball. 18-0. I don't know how many knockouts, but that's pretty impressive at featherweight. And Dogbo's tough dude. See how that one goes. He's had a couple stumbling blocks lately, but he was doing fairly good on all his other ESPN appearances I saw him in. Liam Davies involved in the Somebody's Always Gotta Go fight. 14-0, number 12 at Super Bantamweight, fighting a nice Italian guy's name here, Vincenzo La Famina, 13-0. Vincenzo is 13-0, too. EBU Super Bantamweight title on the line for that one. 13-0 against 14-0. Can't be much better in matchmaking than that. But Vincenzo, for some reason, it must be racism against Italians, Tony. He's number 63 in the world. He's only got one less win.
Vincenzo should automatically
be in the top 10. Yeah, right. And these guys got some weird-ass names in the next fight. We got number 21 at welterweight, Ikau Usman. Usman, I guess that's how we pronounce it. He's looking for his 20th win, 19-0, fighting Harry Scarf with two F's, Scarf, 12-2 is his record. This one's for three titles, too. BBBFC British welterweight title, Commonwealth Boxing Council welterweight title, and IBF European welterweight title. And then we got the Denzel fight of the night. Denzel Bentley, he's 18-2-1, fighting Nathan Heaney, who's 17-0 for the BBBFC British middleweight title. And it's number 50 in the world, against number 55. And we got a female fight on the card, too, for the WBC World Super Welterweight title, which is vacant for the time being. 10-rounder, 2-minute rounds. Hannah Rankin, 13-6, against Emma Kozin, who is 23-1-1. And Rankin has lost two of her last six. Kozin just won. Okay, Saturday, also in the United Kingdom, and Wolverhampton. How would you like to live in a town named Wolverhampton? Frank Pettijean, 24-6-3 against Adam Azim, 9-0 in the main event. Super lightweight fight, EBU European super lightweight title on the line. And then Matteo Signani, 32-6-3 against Tyler Denny, 17-2-3 at middleweight. That one's for the EBU European middleweight title. And then Reese Edwards against Brad Foster. Reese is 14-0, Foster 15-2-2 at featherweight. Okay, and we got a DAZN fight from Inglewood, California on Saturday. Marilyn Rivas, 17-4-3 against Erica Cruz Hernandez, 16-2. The WBA World Super Bantamweight female fight, obviously. And Diego Pacheco, 19-0, fighting Marcelo Caceres, who is 32-5-1. Two titles, WBC USA middle super middleweight title and WBO international super middleweight title. And then we got a couple one-loss fighters fighting for the WBA intercontinental bantamweight title, which is vacant. Khalid Yafai, 27-1, fighting Jonathan Rodriguez, who's 16-1-1. And Rodriguez has at least a 6-fight win streak. That's shows the 6 green dots there on BoxRec. And Yafai has lost one and only, his one and only loss comes in his last 6. So he has experienced the most recent loss, I guess, of the two of them. So we'll see how that goes. But if you like to do that kind of betting mass, you might want to bet on Rodriguez. He's got the streak going. Anyway, Australia, you got one. On Wednesday, the 22nd, before our next show, is Somebody's Always Got to Go fight, too. It's Nikita Tazoo, and must be related to, is that the sister? Or no, that's a guy's fight. It's fighting Dylan Biggs, 10-0, Makita Tsuzu. Is that a relative of Costa Tsuzu? It's got to be, it's Australia. I don't know. I have not done my research on that. Anyway, it's for the Australian Super Welterweight title. Makita Tsuzu, 7-0 against Dylan Biggs, 10-0 at Super Welterweight. That's about it for our upcoming stuff. We had a little bit of not controversy, I guess, but same old stuff. They had a little face-off between Usyk and Fury the other day. And I guess the way they're trying to get under his skin is Fury's entire camp just starts chanting the word pussy every time Usyk tries to pose for the camera. And Fury just kind of put her head forehead to forehead and tried to like push Usyk back, and Usyk was just like trying to stare right in his face, and I don't even think Fury was making eye contact with him. I think he was just kind of trying to do as much as he could without throwing a punch. It's kind of crazy, but they have pushed off the fight. So it's not going to happen when we thought it was. Obviously, he needs a little bit more time to adjust himself after that and got the situation. But a fight's going to happen. Okay, so for February now?
Yeah, February 17th.
Yeah.
February, all right.
Well, you know what I saw yesterday? Was that December 23rd card they're having in Saudi Arabia? Dude, that's like the WrestleMania of boxing, man. Yeah, it's good. Dude, I mean, the card they got on that, I mean, you're talking a couple really good fights. I mean, when you're talking about, like, the third fight, is Dmitry Bivol.
Right.
Shit, really? You know, he's like the co-main event? I mean, you're talking, you got Anthony Joshua. You got what the hell is the name of the boy he's fighting? Jesus Christ, that just came out of my mind. Wallin, yes, Otto Wallin from Germany. Yeah, hey, Otto Wallin gave Tyson Fury a hell of a tough fight.
Right.
I mean, Fury cut bad. And even like, okay, you could say, well, he gave Fury a tough fight because he cut him. Well, yeah, but if you go back, you know, then Fury kind of took over in the middle rounds. It's like, okay, Fury's going to stop him around 8 or 9. And Wallin came on strong. Wallin had Fury hurt in the 12th round. I mean, he rocked him pretty good with a few shots. So, I mean, that is right there. I mean, you figure, okay, Joshua's going to be favored going into that fight. But, you know, Wallin is a live underdog. A live underdog. Now, what they're going to want here is your two heavyweight attractions. They're going to want Joshua to win that fight, and they're obviously going to want Deontay Wilder to win, and he's fighting another tough character in Joseph Parker out of New Zealand. I mean, Parker is another really tough fighter, and he's a guy that he's not flashy, but he's good. He's solid, and he's got a decent chin. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, confuse him with George Shavallo, but he's got a, you know, pretty good beard, and I want to see how he can stand up to Wilder's power, and if he can, you know, get on the inside and, you know, rough him up a little bit and make it a tough fight. They're going to want Wilder to win, obviously, and hopefully what they're hoping is that Joshua wins impressively, Wilder wins impressively, and put them together for a big money showdown.
But, and you said Parker's not a cheap date. And then
no.
how about the big Chinese fighter? Can we get him on there to fight Nagamo?
WrestleMania 3, Hogan and Andre.
Yeah, we could do some tag team boxing.
Oh, yeah, right. It's been done. We've talked about it. Tag team boxing.
And so I'm looking at it, right? And now, did they announce if that's going to be on one of the apps or if that's going to be on pay-per-view?
I don't know.
I haven't heard. Okay. So either way, the card that intrigued me enough. So as I'm looking here, December 23rd this year falls on a Saturday. And normally when I work Christmas trees, I usually work Friday night till close, and then I open on Saturdays, so I'm usually done by 4 o'clock. Now, you figure the car's going to be in Saudi Arabia. It's not going to start at a traditional, you know, U.S. evening time. It's going to start in the afternoon. So if I work that day till 4, I should be able to get home in time for the meat and potatoes of the card. So if it's now if it's on an app, that's no problem. If it's on a pay-per-view, you know, do you, I don't know how much they're going to charge, but things like, okay, how do you justify paying so much if you're only going to see maybe 2 or 3 of the fights? I still might do it because those fights intrigue me that much. But that's great because it's on a Saturday and I work Saturday day, not Saturday night, which is perfect.
Nice.
I'm always plotting. I'm always thinking. Devious. Calculating.
Yeah, so I don't know what the rest of the card, but hey, maybe you can take off an hour early if it's that good.
Yeah. I mean, if all goes well, we could be out of trees by that time anyway on December 23rd. So I'm like breaking stuff down. I'm like, yeah, do you really need me to help break the stuff? They're like, yes. I'm like, no, you don't. You got the young boys here. Let them do the hard work. I entertain your customers for 5 weeks. You can, you know, give me a day off to watch some fights.
Right. Well, speaking of fights, I'm going through my Google alerts, and we got a big story here. Ronda Rousey and Brock Lesnar are going to fight at UFC 300.
Each other?
Yeah, right? I don't think so, but yeah, that would be a fake news of the week if it was true.
Yeah, oh my God, I know.
No, Dana White reveals whether Ronda Rousey and Brock Lesnar will fight at event. This is a DAZN story for UFC 300, and probably not going to happen. I'm not even going to click on it. Don't even get your hopes up. But that would be an onion story. Battle of the sexes. Brock Lesnar versus Ronda Rousey. It'd make more sense in wrestling. Anyway, we do have a UFC card to talk about for this coming Saturday as well. Let me see if there's anything in Bellator. Oh, big one we got to talk about. Big, big, big story. The WBC has ranked Francis Ngannou number 10 at heavyweight in the world after one fight. What do you think of that, Tony?
Well, you know, you went out there. I mean, you got to look at some other guys that got ranked so quickly. Guys like, now granted, he had a highly touted amateur career, but a guy like Lomachenko that was ranked pretty much the day he turned pro.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, Ngannou has had fight experience, maybe not traditional boxing experience, you know, at least in the professional ranks, but he has fight experience, and he came in there, and, you know, he gave a tremendous showing. I'm surprised that 6 years ago that Conor McGregor didn't get ranked at least in the top 15-20 after he gave an admirable performance against Floyd Mayweather. I mean, he wasn't, you know, as much of a threat to Mayweather as Ngannou proved to be to Fury. But at the same time, you know, he didn't disgrace himself.
Yeah, right. Good point.
Well, it's not a reaction I would expect from the Rain Man of boxing, but there we have it. The rest of the boxing people seem to be pretty pissed off by it, Tony. But wow, yeah.
You go out there and you prove yourself. Okay, granted, he's had one fight. And it was an exhibition or whatever you want to call it, or a non-title fight. I don't know what you want to call it. But And you say, well, he's, like, you know, leapfrogging guys that have been twiddling, you know, up the ranks. You know, he's getting ahead of guys like F.A. Jogbo, who fought last week and who's whatever and won. Or he's, you know, getting ahead of some of these perennial contenders out there that have been, you know, have been doing this for a long time. But the fact of the matter is, he performed admirably against the lineal heavyweight champion of the world.
Right, and it was no exhibition. That was
right.
A fight. No
right.
Exhibition.
Yeah, it wasn't like they came out with headgear on. It wasn't like they came out, you know, in, you know,
16-ounce gloves.
Yeah,
right.
So, I mean, he performed admirably, and some people thought he beat the lineal heavyweight champion of the world. So, I mean, that says something, right?
Wow.
How does a guy like Rademacher, that was an Olympic gold medalist, step right into a fight in his pro debut against the heavyweight champion of the world?
Yeah, and I'd like to see him get a few more fights. I mean, I know whoever he fights, he'll be a big draw in this next one.
Wow. We finally got Tony to be an MMA fan.
He's just being objective. He's just using the professional and analytical skills.
Awesome. Anyway.
And the thing is, you got to understand, you know, growing up watching this for as long as I have, sometimes you'll see things like as crazy as it's getting now with your guys like your Jake Pauls and, you know, like all of these. You know,
good news, Logan Paul's retiring from boxing.
Razor running at a combined 111 years old fighting. 55 and 56, right?
Oh, that just happened, right? I did see some of that.
You know, a lot of these things now that, you know, you never really got back in the day. You know, a fighter come up the ranks.
Bare knuckle, too.
And he fight, and he get a title shot, and he win, and be champion, and then he loses title, and he might get another shot, and he might lose. And then he becomes like a gatekeeper, and then he retires, and that's pretty much the end. Now, like, you really don't have an end anymore, and you have so many avenues for viewership. Like, 20 years ago, would there be a guy like a YouTube internet sensation that is running around and is talking so much shit, but then he could actually fight a little bit? I'm not going to call the guy a legitimate contender, but he can throw hands. You know, he's not a Charlie Zelenoff. He can throw hands a little bit, and he's charismatic enough where he's going to make money doing this because he's built a following and people want to see him. You know, that was unheard of back in the day. It was unheard of. You know, social media and things like YouTube and TikTok and all that has, especially with the young viewership, has gotten so many eyes, so many places where you can get attention if you're charismatic. But the problem is you get the attention because you're charismatic. You got to be able to back it up.
Right.
Because you can talk all the shit in the world. Like, you can talk like, oh, you can't fight literally. Well, guess what? It's going to fizz out real quick.
True that.
You know, I said this, you know, Tom, you weren't even the co-host. This is how long ago I said this. We were joking one time back, shortly after I started doing this in 2008. And we were talking about, you know, different fantasy dream fights and so-and-so, if so-and-so could fight so-and-so. And at the time, there was a lot of talk about Kimbo Slice.
Mm-hmm.
Because Kimbo Slice was going from the backyard fighting, and then he was doing, like, some mixed martial arts fighting, and then there was talk about him taking some legitimate boxing matches. And I said the first thing I would do, this is, now we're going back into, like, the 2010-ish.
Right, early 2000s. Late 90s, early 2000s.
Well, yeah, but then this is even later into that. Because I remember I started writing the series in 2008, and the first thing I said was, if there's a fight you want me to match up, let me know. I said, but don't give me something like Mike Tyson and Kimbo Slice because I won't consider it until Kimbo has a legitimate boxing match. Until he fights in a legitimate boxing match, I'm not gonna match this up. And that was 2008. So then it was like within like a year or two, he did have a boxing match, and he knocked out a couple lower level guys. And I remember the first thing I said, if I'm his management team, I call out Mike Tyson immediately. And Tyson at the time had been retired for about 5 years. He had lost a fight to Kevin McBride in 05. He'd been retired for about 5 years, but it wasn't like he was irrelevant, or it wasn't like he was not on people's minds. And I said, and here's the reason I call him out immediately. Kimbo Slice is going to get exposed. He's going to get exposed when he steps into it with a guy that's a pure boxer. Maybe not a huge puncher, but, and I'll just get to give you a perfect example, a guy like, at the time, Chris Bird. Chris Bird was not a big puncher. Chris Bird was so quick and technically proficient, I could see him really making Kimbo Slice look foolish. And or you get somebody else that was a rising contender that, you know, would really just blast him out of the water. And I said, no, you got to call Mike Tyson out. And I said, because here's why.
I don't know if Kimbo would have ever wanted that fight, though.
You're going to reach guys that are Kimbo Slice fans. You're going to reach guys that are my age.
It would have been great.
Mike Tyson. And you're going to reach the younger generation that knows Mike Tyson from the Hangover movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say that would have stopped that was I think Kimbo was like a student of the Mike Tyson style. I think he watched enough of his footage that he mimicked, especially in the street fights, the old peekaboo style. And it worked for him. And I don't think he ever would have wanted that fight because he probably had too much respect for Tyson.
Because
Tyson came a little bit before him, before his rep.
Yeah,
it would have made a lot of money.
If I'm Kimbo's management team, I'm thinking, you know, we got a guy here that's limited, but we can sell the shit out of him until he loses.
Mm-hmm.
We can sell the living shit out of him until he loses and gets exposed. Get the biggest fish you can in that frying pan and make a shit ton of money while the iron's hot.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the entertainment here up. The entertainment,
yeah.
You know. And so, yeah, you're right. We never would have seen this years ago, but times change.
Yeah.
I would have wanted to see Kimbo versus Fedor. That
would
have been the fight.
Yeah. You would
Kimbo and Fedor.
You would reach MMA fans. You would reach boxing fans because like shit. And then it's like you got the, like I said, the young generation that knew Mike Tyson from The Hangover and knew Kimbo Slice from the YouTube bullshit. You got guys like me that grew up watching Mike Tyson. It's like, shit, a Mike Tyson fight? Oh, fuck yeah, I'm ordering because it's Mike Tyson. You know? Like the other year, Mike Tyson and Roy Jones, right? And that was, you know, a gimmick at best. Guess what? I ordered it. Because that was my son and I. Yeah. And, you know, you weren't going to get, you know, the thrill in Manila.
Mm-hmm.
But it was entertaining. It's the only thing that was shame that they had to fight in an empty arena. Because imagine how electric that place would have been.
Right.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, Rich,
John.
I don't know if you saw, and, I was just thinking the other day, I was just thinking about it for whatever reason it popped into my head. Did you see that we recently lost the Mansfield University boxing coach?
I did not.
It was on the NC, the National Collegiate Boxing Association page I saw it yesterday morning. Dennis Garner was the Mansfield University boxing coach. I've known Dennis for almost 30 years now. And you know, you couldn't meet a nicer guy. Now, he ran a little program at a small college, and they didn't have much success, but, you know, he had a few decent fighters there. He put a guy here and there in the Nationals. He did have a pretty good heavyweight my freshman year.
He had a program in an area where there was no programs, you know, so he did a good job.
What'd you say?
He had a program in an area where there were no other programs, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So, more power to him, Mike. He did a great job of it.
I'll tell you this. When I was a freshman, and I was having my first session down at, you know, Naval Academy, when we were just sparring, it was like sparring shows, and I remember I talked to him, you know, after the fights, and he talked to me, and he was like a real nice guy. And then a few months later, I'm fighting up in New York, right up in Valhalla, New York, and what I won that night, he was the guy that put the first medal I ever got. He was the guy that put it around my neck. And we had come relatively friendly over the years. And I fought on the first show he hosted at Mansfield. And me and this kid from Penn State, the one I was talking about last week, Frank Stoltz, we tear into each other, right? And he pulled me aside afterwards and just, I want to thank you for, you know, helping make my first show a success, because these people are still buzzing about your fight. And I was chopping thanks. I mean, I'm like, I'm all busted up right now, but yeah, my pleasure. I'm just no blood for you. But we had become really good friends. And, you know, a few years ago, he lost his leg to diabetes and he had a prosthetic leg. You would never know it. And every year we joke that every time I'd see him, okay, this is the year me and you were fighting in the main event. No, don't hit me. I'm getting brittle. And we'd always joke. And I know he'd had some health issues. And like I said, I got the notice yesterday morning that he did pass. And, you know, I wish that there were more genuine guys like him, not just in the boxing world, not just in the boxing circle, but in the world.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't meet a nicer guy. And you know,
I'm sure I had interactions with him as a coach at Norwich. I probably never met him. I might have met him. I don't know. I just don't recall.
I mean, you might have not met him, but he was at that 98 Nationals.
Okay. I think we actually were supposed to go to Mansfield for a scrimmage. I had it all laid out, and we had rented the car and everything like that, or arranged to get a school car. And then they finally told me, like, an hour before we had to leave, that we needed a chaperone to do it. And I went and, like, begged the commandant to do it, and he couldn't do it. So, like, that was one of my funny moments at school, too, because where the name tag is supposed to be on your service cover, I had the words, fuck it. So, after begging and pleading with my hat faced towards him for, like, 30 minutes and him keep saying no, I leave the office, and before I leave, he goes, by the way, Mr. Bergeron, nice name tag. Shit. Probably didn't make a good impression. I think that was Mansfield, but that would have been the closest school to us. So that would have made sense, but we got shut down. So we didn't get to do that as a club team. But and then when I went to VMI, that was a completely different circuit. But when I was trying to build the team, that was one of the first people I think I reached out to, because I found all the other teams in that whole area. So yeah, they might have been one that connected me to Navy to get the whole Naval Academy's equipment. I know Ken Cox was crucial to that, but geez, talk about a trip, a road trip. Our first road trip with the club team was down to Shippensburg. That's where I took my test.
Yeah, I fought there.
Shippensburg. That was a hell of a hike. Anyway.
Tom, you'll appreciate this. So the first few years they were having, my first few years, 95 and 96, there was a guy, he was a kickboxing coach close to Shippensburg area, which is close to Harrisburg. And he actually used to hold shows in an old church. So the first year, I had the flu the previous weekend, and I still was under the weather, so they didn't put me on the card. The second year, I was supposed to fight, and Coach Cox has set up two bouts. Now, we had a heavyweight on our team for 1 year, a former football player that was 230 pounds. I, at the time, was about 182. And Doc's like, I'm going to set you both up with a couple, quote-unquote, small heavyweights. Now, Doc, to him, anything as small was under 230, right? So I don't make the weight because I couldn't. Even when I stepped on the scale of rocks in my pockets, I was still at 187, 188. And the one fighter didn't show. I think it was a kid from Mansfield didn't show. So they're like, oh, we're going to bump Tony off the card because he really isn't a heavyweight. We're going to put the two heavyweights that weighed in are going to fight. And so, okay. So they break off ties with the guy that had the church. So now the following year, we're going to fight at Shep. And I get there. My opponent, I weighed 178. My opponent from Penn State has the flu. It's flu season every year, right? He has the flu. But, like, Tony, we only got one guy for you. Our big dopey heavyweight. I said, Loman. And he said, yeah. Dance around him. We'll be exhausted. I said, he also weighs 265. I said, if you want me to give up almost 87 pounds or 83 pounds, I will. I'll fight him. And then the one time Doc's like, Tone, I can't authorize this. I can't have you give up almost 100 pounds. Come on, that one. I mean, but someone's like, yeah, Tone will fight him. I'm like, yeah, I'll fight him. I don't give a shit. Someone's like, hey, what if you hit him and he falls, he might land on you. I'm like, heavy, Tom. He was a kid, and actually he and I became friends, this kid, Aaron Loman. And he was a kid that was, he was a heavy kid, right? He was 300 and some pounds. And he started boxing to lose weight. You know, he joined the university team, never thinking he was going to have a fight or anything. He just was like, yeah, if I can use this to lose some weight and whatever, maybe have a fight. He ended up going to nationals, and he ended up, you know, I think it was my senior year he ended up going. And he wasn't bad. You know, he wasn't a bad boxer, you know. He would just, once he started, like, learning a little bit and losing some weight, I think he ended up getting down to around 250-ish. So he lost about 100 pounds. He was around 350. He got down to about 250. And that motherfucker could punch. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, yeah, you could probably outbox him. You could probably, you know, just try to gas him out and then beat him. But, man, he hits you even on the shoulder. He might, you know, rocket launch you across his room.
Yeah. Oh, it's like the Air Force guy. It's tough. Watery.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got a couple more MMA fights to talk about, and then we're going to wrap it up. We only got 26 minutes left on our allotted time here on Blog Talk Radio. Anyway, we shouldn't need all of it. It's back in Vegas for UFC this weekend. On Saturday, we got a main event of Brendan Allen versus Paul Craig. And this one is a Fight Night 232. Not sure what that means as far as where it's going to be televised, whether it's going to be ESPN Plus or regular ESPN. Well, that's weird. Anyway, so we'll have to look that up. You'll have to look that up wherever you are. But usually that means at least the prelims are on. Going to be on Showtime. I mean, ESPN or ESPN2 or ESPN News or something. But it is also college football season, so sometimes they just migrate right to ESPN Plus. Either way, Brendan Allen comes in at 22-5 at middleweight. Paul Craig, 17-6-1. Craig has lately been fighting to, you know, get the quick submission. If he's able to chip the armor and get that on Brendan Allen, I'd be surprised. But he's also had trouble trying to bring people to the ground to engage in that type of fighting that will earn him the submission, and he could get knocked out. So Allen could do that as well. So that one's, I think, pretty evenly matched. You never know whether Paul Craig will change his style, though, because he is a big enough name. He's probably safe if he loses, but you never know. You never know. And probably won't headline a fight anytime soon. Again, if he loses, so he's got to be looking for that win. Just as bad as Brendan is. Then our co-main event, Michael Morales, 15-0 against Jake Matthews, 19-6. Matthews has looked really good and really bad, so who knows which guy we're going to get here. And Michael Morales is undefeated, but I really haven't seen much of his fights. This is a good welterweight matchup there. And then Chase Hooper, a little bit of a prospect, a little bit of a young veteran, you might say. He's been in some wars already. 12-3-1 at lightweight, fighting Jordan Leavitt, who's 11-2. Yeah, I know. That's a tough one to pick. I'm going to have to do a deep dive into the records of both guys, who they've fought. But I would think Jordan has, I think, a little bit of the higher level experience. Chase Hooper's still a bit new to the big leagues. Talbot in the 11th fight of the night at bantamweight, undefeated at 6-0, fighting Nick Aguirre, who is 7-1. And we got a female fight at strawweight, Luana Pinheiro, who's 11-1, fighting Amanda Ribas, who's 11-4. We got Euros Medic, 9-1, fighting Miktebek Oralbi, I guess. I'll probably butcher that. He is 11-1-1 at welterweight. Medic, they call him the dentist. He has some crazy power. So, you know, it's probably one of those fights you want to, if you're betting on him, you want to put the TKO on the table. Jonathan Pierce at featherweight in the 8th fight of the night. He is 14-4, fighting Joe Anderson Brito, who's 15-3-1. Chad Analiger. His 12-6 at bantamweight, fighting Jose Johnson, who's 15-8. Then we got Christian Leroy Duncan, 8-1, fighting Dennis Tallulian, who is 10-8 at middleweight. And Michael Parkin, 7-0 at heavyweight, fighting Kai Machado, who is 8-1-1. I've not seen either of these guys, so maybe these are new to the UFC guys. But UFC is always looking to expand their heavyweight division. Number four, Jika Saragi. He's 13-3 at featherweight, fighting Lucas Alexander, who's 8-3. Then we got another female fight, Lucy Pudilova, 14-8 at bantamweight, fighting Aylin Perez, 8-2. Trey Ogden, 16-6, fighting Nicholas Mota, 13-5 at lightweight in the second fight of the night. And then Charles Johnson, 13-5, fighting Rafael Esteban. It was 11-0 at flyweight. And then we got Bellator action coming up tomorrow night. Yaroslav Amosov in the welterweight main event. He is undefeated still, 27-0. And he's fighting Jason Jackson, who's 16-4. And then our former guest of ours, is the title holder now, Sergio Pettis, 23-5 at bantamweight, fighting Patrick Mix, who is 18-1 bantamweight. So that's going to be a great one. It's kind of funny that that's the co-main event. Oh, I didn't think the main event was a title fight. Main event is a title fight. So that's two title fights. Again, they're trying to, I guess, match right up to UFC's last event. Two title fights at the top of the card. Rafael Stotts in the third supporting fight to the two main events. He is 19-2 at bantamweight, fighting Danny Sabatello, who's 14-3. And AJ McKee, also on this card, 13th fight of the night. He is 20-1 at lightweight, fighting Sydney Outlaw, another great fighter's name there. Is 17-5. This is his record at lightweight. And then we got Patrick and we got Patricky Friere, is 25-11 at lightweight, fighting Alexander Chablis, who is 23-3. And also heavyweights, Marcelo Gomes, 10-4, fighting Terrell Fortune, who is 13-3. A lot of big names on this card. Sumiko Inaba, 6-0 in the 10th fight of the night, fighting Denise Kielholtz, who is 7-5 at flyweight. Timur Kizriev, 13-0 at featherweight, fighting Justin Gonzalez, who's 14-2. And there's a lot of preliminaries. We're not going to go through all of them. But Mike Hamill on the card, 11-5. Not related to the Hamill that gave John Jones his only loss by disqualification. But he's 11-5, fighting Tim Wilde, another good fighter's name, 16-4-1 on the undercard. Yeah, a lot of good names on the undercard. Cody Law. How about that for a fighter's name? Laying down the law. 7-2. Fighting Jefferson Pontes. 6-0 at featherweight. That's about it for that one. Have I missed anything? I feel like I missed a big story. Probably not. I think I covered it all. All right. You guys got any final thoughts?
I mean, I don't know how much we got on the air, but we were talking about the Rocky Run first, logged on today.
Yeah.
Last week, I did the Rocky Run, and I'm not much of a runner. I did this one on a sore foot and ankle, and I joked with my friend going into it. I said, I Googled what was bothering me, and I said, Google the doom and gloom of medical advice is – because pain on the side of your foot and your ankle could be one of three things. It could be a stress fracture. It could be a stress hairline fracture. It could be tendonitis, or it could be bursitis. And two of them require possible surgery, And he goes, I'm surprised they didn't tell you you possibly had like a brain aneurysm in your foot, or you had cancer of the foot, because that's what Google always tends to do. So what I did going into this, and you guys saw my pictures from last week, I did a lot of boxing preparation. I couldn't run. I couldn't do a consistent running program like I wanted. Not that I'm much of a runner anyway. So what I did the last few weeks leading into it was the nights in my basement gym, I'd strap on the 5-pound ankle weight, the 20-pound weighted vest, and I would alternate every other round. I would shadow box around. And then the next round, I would do light run around the basement. Not fast, not hard, but just getting the movement going. And then I would do some running at the gym. And then I would do light runs in my neighborhood with the 20-pound weighted vest. And I would go about a half a mile to a three-quarters of a mile. A couple of days before the run, I did a simulated 5K. I had my map on, my walk, and I averaged about a 12-minute mile, which I ran some of it, and I was running at a 9.5-minute pace, which was a little too much, and I knew I couldn't sustain that. So I said to myself, I said, when you get there, you're going to have to back it off. You're not going to be able to sustain that pace. And I don't think you can, I don't think your foot can take it either. I said, okay, game plan, plan B, plan C, right? Like a fight. So I got there, suited up. And it's funny, is I'm literally in the area where you're dropping your bags up. I'm like, here's how big this run is. I look, I'm like, oh my God, it's Trisha from Manhattan, the girl that I know. I'm in the middle of the run. I hear Yo Tone. I turn around. I'm like, oh, my God, it's Tony from St. Louis. I'm seeing people from all over the country that I've met before. The one guy, hey, the Paulie guy, he lives 10 minutes from me. But I'm like, hey, it's Paulie from 10 minutes from me.
Mm-hmm.
So I got there, and I start the slope. And I said to myself, I said, Tony, just cross the line. Don't, let your pride, interfere with your health here. Don't make that mistake you've made too many times. So keep a slower pace. Walk if you have to. In the first year I did it, I ran the full thing. I averaged 11-minute mile, and I ran the whole thing. And that was 4 years ago. Then the year after that, the first year I did the Thunder Lifts, I did not train in the outfit, and I struggled, you know, because it was constricting my breathing. So the last 2 years, I was about a similar time frame. So this year I start, and I'm doing like a slow jog. And I'm doing it, and I'm like, man, it's hurting. I said, but you know what? Just keep going and see how you feel. And I kept going, and I said, okay, if you get to a mile, if you can't run anymore, walk. And I got to the mile. And my foot was hurting, but it was starting to go numb, like a fight where, like, you break your hand. After those first two rounds, it goes numb, and you can use it again. I said, okay, do the next half mile till you get to the turnaround point and see how you feel. And I felt okay. Well, it wasn't even hurt anymore. Now you're going uphill. Now I'm like, ah, this kind of sucks a little bit. You're going uphill. But I'm going uphill. I'm like, all right, Tony, get to 2 miles and see how you feel. I felt okay. Then I was getting to the point, it was funny, the last 2 years I did it, I saw the one point where I was really, really fatigued, and that was a point where I was definitely walking, and I was like, wait a minute, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm okay, I'm passing this point, and then at one point I did stop, broke stride, because I did see a golden retriever there that I had to run over and pet, and then I saw that line, I was like, dude, I'm like, I actually feel good. And I said those words. I probably said them out loud. I probably offended a few people. I said, I fucking feel good. And then then the last, you know, 100 or so yards, I ran pretty hard. I pumped my arms as I crossed the line. And I was like, I was actually excited. Now, my time was not good. I was at like about like a 12-plus minute mile. But you figure I had kept a slower pace on purpose. And at one point when we just started the run, two people were trying to stop and get selfies with me while I was trying to jog, and they're like, no, we need selfies first. Okay. But in that outfit, and with that foot and ankle issue, to do it in 39 minutes, which was like a 12-minute and 30-second mile or something. And I'm like, you know what? I can accept that. A couple of years ago, I would have been like really upset with myself, but I never broke stride. And I crossed that line. That's all that matters. I crossed that line and I crossed it strong. And I fucking look good doing it. and then I wrote my little piece that night when I got home. And I said, you know, I've already signed up for next year. I'm already captain of my team again, trying to recruit more people. I've already got two to sign up. And you know what? 14,000 people are there, and they probably raised $750,000 for the Special Olympics, and it was a lot of fun. It brings people together, and, you know, I mean, it really shows me how special Rocky is to people. I grew up in Philadelphia, so those landmarks are basically in my backyard. Oh, yeah, there's a statue. Yeah, there's the steps. Yeah, there's where the, well, it's not standing anymore, but there's where the Philadelphia Spectrum was, and there's the Italian Market, and there's, you know, a lot of stuff. You don't want to go to where the pet shop and the gym work. That area is really bad now. But the landmarks to me are right there. But when I see people coming from St. Louis, and I have people come up to me with their phone and show me their phone, and their phone was written in English saying, will you take a picture with me? Because they don't speak fluent English.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, this is international. It's not just, you know, local. This is an international event. And to be part of it. And saying, like, I always joke that I always felt Rocky was a birthright to me. Because I was born in 1976, the year the first movie came out, I was born in Philadelphia. I mean, I live outside of Philadelphia now, but I was actually born in the city. And I'm Italian. So I don't think I had a choice to be anything but a boxer. You know, and I always felt like Rocky was mine because of just those similarities. And then I realized, I'm like, no, man, this is special. And to be a part of it was, and to be a part of it every year is really special. Now, Rich, you saw that I'm trying to, you know, arrange that meet and greet with Sylvester Stallone in a few weeks. He's going to be at the Art Museum. And they're only picking so many people to get the golden ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'm going to get that or not. But I've already, you know, put feelers out for the Sly Stallone shop. They've seen my post from the run. And I'm going to say to them, if you don't select me, what's the cost? What is the cost? Because we've said this for a couple times on our show. I got the big three that I have to get photos with, and I've gotten two of the three so far. Vinny Paz and Hulk Hogan.
Nice.
Now I need Sly. And that'll complete my big three, and I can make my one celebrity video that I've been working on for a couple of years now that I can't complete till I get that picture.
Awesome. Well, we'll do our best. We might have to publish something on the actual website. Jesus Christ, it's been like 3 weeks since I put an article up. I've been slacking. But, yeah, that'd be a good way to get some interest.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it's good.
Hey, and if you want to post some of my stuff from last week's thing, please do.
Yeah, heck yeah. It's original content. Jeez, I didn't even think of doing that, but we ought to. All right, well, I guess that's a good show for us. We got left 7 minutes on the table, but that's good. We got a lot of stuff discussed. Yeah, we got a lot of stuff to talk about next week after it unfolds this weekend. And, yeah, good shit. And I gotta get off the schnikey with the website and get some good content out there. But, yeah, let's talk about John Skelly, too. We got to get him back on the show. Like, I know I say that every week, but I'm sure he'd do it in a heartbeat. We just got to figure out a day. Anyway, thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys.
Good show.
Bye.
Adios. See ya.